You know, I think one of the most important topics today in law enforcement and criminal justice is that of mental health and wellness, specifically for our first responders, brave men and women who are busting their ass every day for their communities, and our brave men and women who serve the armed forces to protect this great country. My next guest is Doug Monda. Doug is the founder of Survive First Incorporated and has a long and decorated career in law enforcement. In 2013, Doug's own mental health became impacted from his long career in law enforcement. His own experience with treatment for PTSD, depression, and attempted suicide was the catalyst that drove the founding of his organization. Doug is now a national keynote speaker. He speaks on the impacts of first responders' job on mental health and family. His mission is to spread awareness of PTSD, depression, and suicide in first responders, hoping to break the stigma so that help may be received before it's too late. You don't want to miss this episode, a very powerful show, next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. I know you got many options, but thank you for spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. We continue to grow because of you, the listener and supporter. If you head over to iTunes, rate and review the show, give us that 5-star rating. We sure would appreciate it. I want to give a big shout out to our sponsors. First of all, Detecticam. This amazing company is protecting our brave men and women in uniform by providing mobile threat detection that is available in the palm of your hand. Head over to cjevolution.com. See the link for Detecticam. Click it and see what they can do for your organization. Folks, I am super excited to be partnered now with Onnit. Onnit is a leader in clinically studied supplements. From the cognitive enhancing Alpha Brain, which I use, to the daily stress formula of New Mood, Onnit has a wide variety of formulas designed to help people achieve their optimal performance. Head over to cjevolution.com, click the Onnit link, and see what they can do for you. On to the show. Folks, I give you the one, the only, Doug Monda. Doug Monda on the show, brother. Thank you for being here. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you, man. I'm honored.
Well, Doug, you had a long history in law enforcement. First of all, brother, thank you for your service. I always ask Leos that come on to the show, I'm going to ask you the same thing. What made you get into law enforcement?
I joke about this every now and then because, you know, everybody goes, oh, I wanted to protect and serve. And I say, no, that's a damn lie. I go in there and kick people's front doors in. And I was an athlete, pro athlete, and my coach at the time, I was doing Ironman triathlon, and my coach said, hey, listen, you're going to run out of gas one of these days, and you need to have something to fall back on. He was a lieutenant colonel, 30 years, you know, so he had the coordinates from way back. And he said, well, you know, I said, well, yeah, okay. And he goes, listen, until you make a career change and get your ducks in a row, I'm not going to let you race no more. And at the time, that's all I cared about. So I said, well, I always wanted to be on a SWAT team. He said, really? I said, yeah. You know, when I was a little kid, I'm that old. Remember when SWAT? And so I had the little, like, cop push car, and I had the SWAT outfits. You know, my mom's got pictures of me as a little turd with all that on. And I said that, and like the next day he calls me over and he says, hey man, here you go. He made me an appointment, man. He like had me in the police academy. He made all kinds of phone calls, and I could kill him for it now. That's how it went down.
And you were a professional soccer player.
Yeah, I was, you know, back when nobody knew what it was.
Now soccer's huge.
Yeah, man. I miss the boat every time. You know, right before I became a cop, I got drafted by New Jersey. They were the New Jersey Stallions, and that was horrible. And I was playing here for Orlando and some small teams, and like $30,000 was a big deal. And nowadays, you ain't walking out your house for $30,000, man. And so, you know, it was a different time and different era back then.
And it's getting bigger. I mean, so it's still, I mean, it's not as big in, you know, in the U.S. as it is in Europe, correct?
Correct. Yeah, now it's.
But it's getting there.
It's getting there. You know, Europe, you know, and South America and, well, pretty much everywhere. But the U.S., man, it's a religion. And it's a way of life. And it's a, you know, soccer, I tell people, it's the only game in the world that unites countries. You could have two countries that want to kill each other, but when World Cup comes around, they will step on the field and shake hands and play each other with honor. Mm-hmm. And exit the game the same way. And it's amazing when you go to other places. And they got guys that are making $160 million a year. And I'd asked a former teammate, how is that possible? He's from Manchester, England. Mm-hmm. And he said, the reason is because you're an American. And I started laughing. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he goes, well, because in America, all you guys watch is football and basketball. And nobody else in the world watches it but you guys. But everybody in the world watches soccer. So they comprehend the revenue that it makes. You know, when a soccer game's on TV, is a normal game of soccer, and this is what it was told to me, in Europe, generates the same amount of revenue that the Super Bowl does. Those big teams like Manchester United and Barcelona, those regular Sunday games make what a Super Bowl makes. So that's why those guys, you know, make what they make.
I remember down, my wife and I were down in Mexico a couple of years ago. I think it was a couple of years ago. Mexico was in the World Cup, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we were down in, we're in Cancun for a vacation. It was about the time where the Mexican soccer team was in the semifinals or the finals or something. They got eliminated. But dude, we're sitting on the beach and we get up there and literally the beach is closed and everybody is surround. I mean, it's like the whole city in Cancun just like shut down. Everybody's glued to the TV. And then when they lost, you would have thought it was the end of the world. You know,
oh, I mean, man. It is to some countries, you know. Okay. I mean, it truly is, man. You can get dangerous in some countries.
Riots, you know, and shit.
Yeah, they riot like, you know, like one of these organizations in L.A. or wherever, you know, would do for a soccer game. In America, we're just like, all right. And, you know, they're ready to go ballistic. I've seen it
going on. Yeah, yeah. Switching back to your career in law enforcement, Doug, what are some of the fondest memories that you have about the job?
It's hard. It almost makes me upset. Mm-hmm. The relationships that mm-hmm. I had with my guys, that's not the politics. You know, I don't miss the politics, but man, I worked with some jam up guys in my career, mm-hmm. hard, heavy hitters that put, you know, that just had honor and integrity and just put their life on the line every day for people they don't even know. And so that's, you know, that's the fondest for me. I had a lot of fun. I got to do a lot of cool stuff in my career, from protecting dignitaries. I was a sniper for John McCain. I got to do a lot of neat stuff with NASA, you know, with astronauts. And I worked with the FBI. I worked with the alphabet soup, as I call it, ATF, DEA. So it was, you know, it was, and that's about how they run, too.
Yeah.
You know, like a soup sandwich. But I did a lot of fun stuff, man. Yeah. But it wasn't always all fun, you know.
Can you now we'll get into your foundation. You're doing amazing things, much needed work with Survivor First. But we talked about this off the air a little bit, Doug. Why aren't we? And maybe it's a simple question, but why aren't we taking better care of our first responders in terms of mental health? Preparing them better from the onset, because again, we were talking about this before, and I'm just speaking from my experience in Colorado, from my vantage point, you know, what I looked at over two decades, and it's always after the fact, you know, which is good that we're taking care of, or at least we're, you know, we're doing better than when I and you got into it. But why are we doing this more on the onset, man?
Man, that's a whole show in itself, that topic. But yeah. I can give you the, you know, my opinion, mm-hmm. and based on what I've experienced, Well, one reason we don't is mainly budget. Budget is a monster in law enforcement. Chiefs have an issue, and this is one of the things we did with our foundation mm-hmm. this past year. We used to charge to go teach. If I had to go out of town for 3 days, I had to travel fees and, mm-hmm. and that such. We eliminated that. Now we do it for free. Mm-hmm. Then my organization obviously is lucky enough to have the support we do. People will volunteer and help me fly places, you know, that whole type of stuff. But what the reason is a chief, and I just came from a chief's conference in Tampa, Florida, and I had this conversation with several of them, and they all agreed, which was shocking. And the problem is they have a budget and they have mandatory training. But we touched on this. You got a firearms, you got DT, you mm-hmm. got driving, you got medical, you know, whatever it is in whatever state, but the mandatory training. And by the time they get to the check off, you know, they get a budget to do that training that year, time they get to the bottom, the budget's gone, and they need to check all their boxes for their mandatory training. And unfortunately, mental health is not mandatory retraining, mm-hmm. and it's not on there. So it puts the chiefs in a predicament, because every chief I meet, and I meet tons of them, I just spent 3 days with hundreds of them, and they all know somebody mm-hmm. that has had this problem. They've helped, they've lost. I don't know too many chiefs that don't know somebody in their career, because you're not going to be a chief if you've been there 5 years. And so many chiefs that know somebody who killed themselves. Mm-hmm. And my mentor, who was a police chief at Palm Bay Police Department, in the beginning of his career, his buddy committed suicide. Jeez. And he committed suicide with a gun that my buddy bought him as a gift. And so it trained, you know, sent him on a runaway train his entire career. So he's always been very supportive of it. But once again, departments are run by CYA. Mm-hmm. We all know that, right? And if anybody doesn't know what that means, they can look it up. and budgets. And unfortunately, and like you said, we're in a whole different time, because mm-hmm. years ago we were, you know, especially spec op guys like myself, eat a bullet, keep moving, you know, put some duct tape over your bullet hole and get to work. And, you know, that mentality. And if something's wrong with you, suck it up, put it away and get to work. I was told that on my first suicide attempt by my chief. Mm-hmm. He goes, I don't know what's wrong with you, but whatever's wrong with you, put it in the closet and lock the door and get back to work.
Yeah.
No, needless to say, that was the best advice I got. And, you know, that worked. But he's no longer there. Mm-hmm. So that's the main core issue. From what I'm seeing, you know, obviously I do a lot of my work. I mean, I'm nationwide, but I do a lot of work in Florida. And the budget seems to be a big issue. Now, cops don't want to be cops. People don't want to put up with this crap. Yeah. So that now you have staffing issues.
Yeah. And you just hit it on the head. I mean, we have all these attrition rates. I mean, people, when I joined, you know, became a cop two decades ago, there'd be like 100 or 200 people going for like a handful of jobs. You don't see that shit anymore. No. So what's to the point of what we were talking about, Doug, it's even more reason why we should be investing in preparing our officers, you know, better. You know, I think we've come a long way, at least in my opinion, from where we were when you and I got into it, as far as mental health treatment and things like that. But there's so much more we can do, because people aren't flocking to it anymore for good reason. Why would people want to put up with this shit?
Yeah, you know, I've had a couple. I agree with you 100%. I mean, it's obviously it's all over the news. Even nobody, you know, I think Orange County is mm-hmm. what I heard. That's Orlando. That's mm-hmm. Disney. And it's huge. And they're like 280 officers down. And it's a big, big, big county. You know, they're a sheriff's department, big city. And then you look on TV and you got people that don't have jobs and want $15 to make hamburgers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you not only can you go get a job making twice as much as $15 an hour, you can get a pension, a retirement, medical, and serve your country.
Mm-hmm.
serving, not that there's anything wrong with making hamburgers, trust me, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, man. Like, and, but it could be the whole argument with the new generation of kids. Mm-hmm. Like you and I were laughing at them. I got a couple in this house, man. Like, hey, you know, 15, I was traveling, playing ball, driving a car. You can't do that now. Driving a car and working and doing stuff. And I got 15-year-olds here that they're like, hey, we want to get our permit. And I laughed at them. Yeah. Like, man, you better learn to fold your sheets.
Yeah, contribute.
Drive a car in this new mentality. And right before I retired, we would always hire these young kids, even kids that were coming back, military kids. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, they all want to be on my SWAT team. Hey, what do I look? I'm young, I'm strong, I can lift 200.
Gotta put in the time, brother.
Yeah, I want to be, what do I gotta do to be on your team? And I would look at him and go, are you divorced yet? No. Did you get your car repoed or your house foreclosed on? They're like, no, come back and see me when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, because come back and see me when mommy's not folding your clothes. And this newer generation, and I've had this conversation as well with many people, they just are brought up differently than us. I think that's part of our problem. There's nicknames for them. And I don't want to trash anybody, but we all know what they are. It's just a different, and I think they see the news. You know, the news beats us to death sometimes. You know, that it's cops, not cops. It's that particular person if they do something wrong. And, you know, maybe that scares them away. And then they see, because, you know, now we have social media. We didn't have that back in the day. When I became a cop, man, we were carrying the VCR phone, I called them, you know, the white thing with the little antenna. And then when we got Nextel flip phones, we thought we had Ferraris, man. Yeah. And boy, I missed the Nextel flip phones. And, so they see the virtual stuff every day and cops getting killed and stabbed and this, that, and the other. And who would want to do that? You know, they're like, man, I could stay home and in my room or collect disability, whatever the reason would be. Why would I want to go out there and get killed?
And I do think, though, Doug, and you, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. You know, there's a lot of shit out there, a lot of bad press. Cops screw up. We make mistakes. You know that. We're human, and there have been bad cops out there. We've talked about that. I think the overwhelming majority of brave men and women out there are good people just trying to do a difficult job. But the one thing I wish is I wish the people who are, and I think there's a ton of people out there that are supportive of first responders. I wish they were more friggin' vocal, because it's just like the small minority of groups that hate cops. They get all the play, and maybe people are just scared to speak up, you know, or they get pounced on. Mm-hmm. But God damn it, stand up, and if you believe in something, say something.
Right. Yeah. CYA.
So, yeah. Yeah. That's pretty. Yeah, it's true.
You know, that's a lot too.
Now, you suffered, with your own mental health. It became impacted after your career in law enforcement. Can you share a little bit of that with us?
Yeah. I to this day, I don't truly know what the defining moment. I don't really have the answer, but I know what led me there. And when I, growing up as a kid, as a young adult, I had amazing discipline and dedication. That's how I became become an athlete. Mm-hmm. That's what you live, breathe, and eat every day. And not only, you know, when I went to the police academy, which was like 12, 15 hours a day, I was running 70 miles a week. I was biking 300 to 500 and swimming probably 30,000 meters easy. And doing Ironman triathlon, running marathons on the weekend and going to, and there's a reason I'm telling you this, mm-hmm. and going to the police academy and studying and working. And, you know, I had a wife at the time and I think I had one kid.
Sure.
So I was doing all that and I was always known for my dedication and my discipline and my work ethic. Mm-hmm. And I brought that with me everywhere. With that being said, I took that with me through my career. I never called out sick. I would break bones, get stitches, cover it, get to work, because I never wanted mm-hmm. to miss a SWAT call out. Wasn't going to let my guys fight without me. I never wanted to miss out on any of the action. My fear was, oh man, if I stay home, they might get a shooting tonight. And it was just that drive. And then I started, you know, you're young and then you start to get a little older and I started taking on injuries and I wasn't taking care of myself the way I should have through my injuries. Mm-hmm. And I went from being, I'll be 50 here in a couple weeks and, you know, I'm well put together. You know, I'm in shape. I train still to this day, but it was different back then. You know, you're young, you're mm-hmm. injury free, you know, now I'm almost 50. I'm going to be 50. And, I abused myself physically. So that took apart. I ended up blowing my shoulder out, my knee out, broke my hands 5 times in 1 year, my one hand, and had shoulder surgery, wow. knee surgery, broke my back, had an 11-year-old kid steal the car, plow me into a tree, and it led to 3 vertebrae being replaced with carbon fiber blocks, fusions. And I just continued to push through it and to push through it. Most people mm-hmm. wouldn't be able to ever work again. Mm-hmm. And it impacted me because I went from being 100 miles an hour daily to sitting on a couch watching Oprah Winfrey. I joke about this when I speak. I think she's the reason I went crazy. And because I didn't have any channels. So during the day, it was like random picks, man. She that's what's wrong with our society. I think she did it to everybody. But, and I was in pain.
Yeah.
You know, I was a train wreck. I wasn't a pill popper. I refused to sit around and eat pills, but I didn't refuse to put a handle away. You know, I could put a handle a day down, mm-hmm. no problem. Mm-hmm. And, started drinking. And as cops, we're notorious for this. When you're in your office, and we all remember this and know it, when you're in the PD or you're in your office, I'm a dope guy, so I was in my office a lot. The radio goes off and somebody's screaming for help. What does everybody do?
Get the hell out of the PD and go towards them.
Oh, man, other agencies, people who never leave their office, they come running. Mm-hmm. I'm guilty of it myself. I don't care. I will run you over if one of my guys is fighting. And rightfully so. But when somebody's at home hurting or when somebody's at home struggling, what do? Mm-hmm. Not a damn thing. Yeah. Not everybody, but
a lot of people don't do a damn thing.
90%. We don't do it. And that's what happened to me. I don't fault my guys for it because they're all dads with new babies. You know, we're all in that era. And, you know, in this business, out of sight, out of mind, mm-hmm. and they got to live their lives. But that's kind of what took place. I had too much time to think on my own. I didn't have any self-worth anymore because I always was known as if I wasn't known as an athlete, I was known as the SWAT guy. Mm-hmm. And I was watching that go away. And, I had a crappy relationship at the time. And I think what took place was sitting still for that long amount of time. I did the walker, the wheelchair, the mm-hmm. whole 9 yards, and probably a good year and a half. I also, previously to that, I was one of the guys that went to Hurricane Katrina mm-hmm. and dealt with that aftermath. Some of the stuff we did is we can't talk about it, mm-hmm. but you know, the Astrodome and clearing it out, you know, when they had that nonsense, if you sure. guys heard about that yeah. out west, a big deal, the hurricane and dead bodies and mm-hmm. you know, and the smell and mm-hmm. and it stuck back there and haunted me.
Yeah.
And the lack of humanity that was taking place over there, this is the stuff they don't show on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
And so a lot of these things started to catch up with me because I had more time to think about it. Mm-hmm. And in this industry, it's rough, man. Like, yeah, I'm a Cocoa Beach surf kid, man. You know, to me, everything was dude and surfing and life is good. That's mm-hmm. where that clothing company came. Great. And I was like that when I came to work. And as you know, everything was fun. Everybody was okay. And over time, things transitioned. Mm-hmm. And I got to that point where, man, like, everything sucked. I didn't like anybody anymore. Everybody's a dirtbag. And I worked in the hood. And I work in a, and I worked as a, in the city of Cocoa, which is like number six in the nation for violent crime per capita. So I wasn't handing out cupcakes mm-hmm. and getting cats out of trees. And years and years and years of that hate and that negativity on the streets and the abuse and the dead bodies and the shootings and the stabbings, you know, stuff like mm-hmm. that. It all came to a head, I think, at one time, you know, the totality of circumstances. Sure. And I just got to a point where mentally I was in so much pain and physically I was in an amazing amount of pain. And I wasn't prepared to sit on a couch the rest of my life. I wasn't prepared for any of that. I have to run. I have to go. Mm-hmm. And, that was pretty much the catalyst. Yeah. You know, it's the totality of those circumstances all coming together without the key ingredient here, without training, without education, without a support group, like peer support. I didn't even hear about that until about 2-3 years ago.
Sure.
And training back then, like, man, we did tourniquet training 3 times in 1 year. Yeah. I can put a tourniquet on like a son of a gun, you know? And I could shoot a gnat from a mile away, but I couldn't fix myself.
Yeah. So what was the catalyst, Doug? I mean, how did you get out of those dark periods in your life? I mean,
well, how I got out of it was a couple different things. So, you know, make a long story short. So, you know, I was put in a mental hospital. We call it Baker Act in Florida. Mm-hmm. Make you go into transition.
Sure.
And I was so mad that that's what was being done to me because, you know, I had a little sidekick girlfriend at the time and she told somebody who told somebody who said, hey man, I think my boyfriend's going to kill himself. Next thing you know, cops are like down the street from my house, like putting mm-hmm. body armor on because they're like, we can't go to his house. He's a sniper.
Exactly.
It was this disaster.
Wow.
And I was so mad and so hurt that I came home and here's where that discipline came in. Oh, I'll show you. You think I'm a punk? And you know how most of us are.
Yep.
You think I'm a punk? You think I'm bluffing or I'm trying? So I took the gun to my head and in front of some people and that were there and pulled the trigger.
Yes.
And for some reason, can't tell you why, only somebody knows, I don't know, but for some reason, maybe I was shaking too bad or whatever. It didn't, the gun misfired, didn't bullet in the chamber, got a strike point, nothing.
That doesn't happen, by the way, for those people who are listening, it doesn't happen.
No, a lot of things, it's hard for me to tell that story.
Yeah.
So one thing happened was I got the tar knocked out of me, got the gun taken away from me. And, you know, that stopped that moment that day. I ended up going back to work a couple of days later mm-hmm. and, tried my best to get some help. I didn't have good people and, you know, I had a crappy girlfriend at the time. And, at that particular moment, I just met my wife today. That was one of the defining moments. And when I also realized that there is somebody way bigger and better and more powerful than me. Mm-hmm. And I was brought up in a Christian household and maybe that was an eye opener. Like, hey, I'm not in charge because mm-hmm. I don't miss. I've shot millions of bullets and every one of them have worked. Now I'm a sniper, man. You know, I don't know. I don't know of any that didn't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a defining moment, and I had another bout, you know, a few months later, and because, you know, you're not going to fix it on your own.
Sure.
Somebody told me once, you can't fix the problem with the same mind that created it. And what he meant was you're messed up. All this, your head is all messed up. How are you going to fix it with a messed up head? And so I said, okay, you know, I get it. And shortly after that, obviously, it came back around twice as bad. And I was on my way to, we had a little secret cemetery we used to hide and smoke cigars in. Mm-hmm. And so the public couldn't see us all sitting around. You know how that goes.
Sure.
And I was about 100 yards away, about to turn in, and on that corner was a little store. And right as I'm turning into the parking lot, or about to turn to the cemetery, one of my dear friends who I worked with, he got a call to a fight. And I said, man, let me go help him. Of course, I can't not let my guy go get into a fight. Mm-hmm. Let me help him. When I'm done, I'll go to the cemetery. I'm going to shoot myself. And so I pull in the parking lot. Now, this dude is like 6 foot something or another. He used to play football for the Jets. Okay. He's, his nickname, and I can say, is Darkness, because he's super dark and he's got this beautiful white smile. And he's one of my dear friends. Mm-hmm. And he was my party running mate, my buddy, the whole nice SWAT teammate. And to this day, we're still like that. And when I pulled in the parking lot, he smiled at me. And when I saw that smile, I said to myself, I can't do this to Jeff.
Yeah.
If I do this, he's going to have to clean this up. And I love him too much
yeah.
to do that to him. So I said, hey, man, I'm just going to go home. And I'll do it tonight. Well, when I turned around, I go, I'm going to go back to my office, do some paperwork. And when I went back to the office, it was interdiction time. Yeah. My SWAT team, my chief of 3 days was waiting for me because the guys had picked up on it. Because over a few months, they got to know me
sure.
differently. And they kept denying me because they loved me. I didn't know this,
yeah.
but they did. And we didn't talk like that. But when I came back that day, that's where everything changed in my department. Because when I walked in and they all stopped me, there was guys, we're talking pipe fitters, heavy, heavy hitters, former boys, that spec op guys mm-hmm. from you name the branches, crying
yeah,
and asking me what was wrong and telling me, please. So I guess when I pulled up, to see, and I saw Jeff, I had my gun in my hand, which mm-hmm. I never do. And probably, you know, I mean, if you're a guy who puts a gun here and pulls the trigger, obviously you're out of your freaking mind.
Sure.
You're that guy that's on the corner talking to himself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you can put a picture together. So obviously that's what took place. And they were there and they said, please, man, go get some help. We love you, man. We just want, you know, we don't want you, we need you. And my chief, who was a former drug agent, but, you know, partner of mine, we were drug guys together. We were SWAT guys. He worked his way up through the ranks. He hadn't even signed the paperwork. And he had been there 3 days. And the guys were like, hey, you got to get rid of him. You got to send him away. This is dangerous. He said, no. He's on this team. We created this monster. We're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and he said, I promise you have my word. You go get some help. And you can come back because I didn't want to lose my kid. I don't,
sure.
you know, it's funny in your head. You don't want to lose this. You don't want to lose your job. But in the same breath, you're holding a gun to your head.
Exactly.
Right?
That makes sense.
That's an issue we deal
yeah,
with.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And I believed him. And when I saw the love in the air, I gave him my word. And I'm a man of my word.
Sure.
If I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And so I did. They took me to a hospital to figure out what was wrong with me. We didn't know about PTS and all that. We knew I was depressed and I had, you know, other issues. Everybody mm-hmm. just thought I was crazy.
Yeah.
But, which they were right. so I went away, got help, and I came back to work. I might have got off topic because I'm telling this story, but I came back to work. And when I came back to work, I got my SWAT team back. I got all my stuff back. There, people were scared of me, but it worked.
Yeah.
The doors opened in my community. All the task force I was working with, and the guys were like, "Man, if he can put a gun to his head and pull the trigger, and come back to work, then my problem's not as bad as I think it is. I can get help."
Sure.
And my phone started ringing, and it hasn't stopped ringing since, man. Every day.
Well, thank God.
Yeah,
you know, I'm serious. I mean, I know you hear this, Doug, yeah. but thank God those, you know, your partners were there, and you know they said that. I mean, they love you, they care for you, they, you know, and I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm getting teared up thinking about it. I mean, very powerful, and you know, yeah, and you made a good point. You know that we're so good as first responders dealing with everybody else's problems, Everybody else's problems. And then when you have an issue, I'm just talking in a broad sense, you know, specific officers have issues, it's almost like, yeah, like you said, you just kind of fall off the radar, and people, not that they don't love you or care about you, but it's like, oh, well, it's just Doug, he'll deal with it. And it's like, yeah. It's not supposed to be that way. We're, even when we retire, even when we move on, when we're going through hard points in our life, we still are brothers and sisters. We need to take care of each other. We need to check in on each other, you know, especially in your case. I mean, where you were obviously going through some serious shit. Yeah, I am so glad you're here, brother. I mean, I'm Christian like you, and I just, that's God telling you, hey, you need to do more work. I'm going to use you, and you need to help. You need to do work or more work with your foundation, and you know, we're going to help you create this. Which, can you talk about the amazing work you were doing with Survivor First?
Yeah.
Or Survive First. I'm sorry, brother.
So, yeah, that's okay. I call it different names every week. I'm a train wreck. My wife's always,
it's like, it's the wrong name, damn it.
Yeah, she just laughs at me. She's like, I married this lunatic who, when I came home from treatment, she was a girl I just met her. You know, she was waiting for me. She wrote me letters every day.
Keeper.
She took care of everything. She researched what she was doing. She's a smarty pants. She educated herself, and she's a teacher. So, you know, they care about everybody, unlike us, you know, and she prepared, and that was important too. As cops, we have to have a support. You can't do that job and not have a support team. And, you know, it's important that you have good family involved as well. And, so lost track talking about my wife. I'm thinking about calling her to make me something to eat. What we did with the program, how it kicked off, is I took all these things I learned and experienced, and I sat back in the beginning, and I go, when I came back, especially, I'm like, this, when I came back to work, I looked around, because now I've been educated on what it's like to have PTSD and anxiety and depression. I was educated. I'd never been educated in that at all, except, you know, I was trained on how to remove people, eliminate threat.
Sure.
You know? And when I came back, I looked around, I went, holy crap, I'm not the only one. I could have conversations with my teammates and go, wow, he is messed up, you know? And I went, something has to change. Something has to be done. And really what it took me years to form the foundation, because it came out of my pocket, and I wasn't educated in nonprofit and things like that. But what we did is we had to put a plan together to help cops get help and to help chiefs say yes and one of our things is we don't ever want a first responder. I keep saying cops, but first responders. For the people listening, we help firefighters, you name it, straight across the board, and their families, which is important. You and I talked about that.
Sure.
But we had to make it to where it wasn't an issue. And what I found out also a lot, and this was what I was going through, was a lot of cops don't get help because they can't afford it.
Yeah.
For me, it was like I came home and they're like, hey, I need to see you every week or twice a week. And it was a $50 copay. And I was like, man, you know, that stinks. For me, I could afford it at the time. But a lot of cops don't. And I was learning, you know, through this era, I can't afford to go to counseling. I can't afford the co-pays. And I can't afford to go to treatment, because if I do, I'm going to be on FMLA and we'll lose our home. That's crap.
Yeah.
That's not a good reason. And the same thing I said for chiefs that don't have a budget. So our main goal was to, one, to give them the information. And two, make it available for them so that when they go, I can't afford the copay, hey, we can help you with the copay. I can help you with a plane ticket to get to this treatment center if it's out of state. And we can help you do it. And, you know, in the beginning, it was more my support. Hey, brother, I've been there, man. Sure. I know what you're going through, man. We can work on this together. And it evolved to where we're at today, to where we're able to provide assistance to first responders to get there. Mm-hmm. We're taking the no out of the game. Mm-hmm. And we're able to help police departments with training coordinators, whatever, help them be able to say yes. Hey, man, I know you don't have the money in your budget. If you do, because there's some big money departments out
sure,
there.
Sure,
sure. You know,
yeah.
Hey, I don't need you to pay me, but what would be cool is if you can make a donation to the foundation, to Survive First Foundation, guess what? That's that could be a week's worth of therapy for a guy. Mm-hmm. Or that could be a plane ticket to get a guy in treatment. And I tell him that, but I don't need you to pay me. I need, I'll take that, but if you can't afford it, I'm coming anyway, because I just need 5 minutes of your guys' time, because all I want to do is tell them that's not the answer. Here's some things to look for. Even if you don't have a problem, pay attention, because it could be your zone partner. It could be your brother, your sister, your daughter, whatever. It could be your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Listen, please. And it's been successful, man. Yeah. Every time I teach or speak, I get every time. And I wish I couldn't tell you that. I wish it was the opposite. But every time somebody says, hey, man, can I ask you a question? And that's a good thing, because sure. That means it's working and the guys are open.
Paying attention, yeah.
And paying attention. And, I could tell you countless stories of success stories where it's working. So, that was really the heart and soul behind it.
Yeah.
Is to provide that training, education, and that assistance out there.
Yeah.
And take the no, take that no out of the equation mm-hmm. or reasoning. So,
yeah. Do you think, Doug, that, part of the, and I totally get the financial aspect of it. I mean, but do you think some of it, or let me ask you this, do you think we're getting better, with supporting, our brothers and sisters rather than saying, like you said, and I was brought up in the same culture, you were suck it the hell up and move forward. Do you mm-hmm. think, I think that's still prevalent. I think it's still a lot out there, but do you think it's getting better, with some agencies? Because I think in my organization, I think we were getting better, meaning we wouldn't give somebody shit if they were saying, look, I'm struggling, and just suck it up. We were getting a lot better when it comes to that.
Yeah, we are. Somebody on social media the other day blasted somebody saying, no, they all stink and nobody cares. And that's not true.
No.
I'm fortunate to travel around the nation and meet great police departments. And I just came from a few weeks in Arizona. I actually get off topic. I started walking across the United States from police department and fire department to introduce myself. And I just left Arizona. I'm taking the time out because that heat and that dirt in Arizona.
A little hot.
Messed me up. I'm a Florida boy. I'm used to heat, but I need some moisture to breathe in the air, man. I was walking through, I think, Tucson or Phoenix. I had dudes shooting me gang signs. I'm like, oh, I'm about to get into shooting. I Google police departments, and I just head that way. And Google took me through some
mean areas.
Latin gang memories. I'm like, oh, I'm going back to South America. I'm about to fight again. And so anyway, I got some other obligations, but I'll head back that way here when it cools off a little bit. But I've met some great departments, and I was in Arizona, Tucson and Phoenix, those areas. They got a little bunch of little subtowns, and I was blown away by the things that these agencies are doing. Phoenix Police Department, man, they are doing some wonderful things in their departments. Marana PD, mm-hmm. Tucson, Phoenix. These guys have implemented therapists on staff in the PD all
day.
Wow,
that's awesome.
That's pretty cool. Peer support programs and trainings, and I was blown away so much that I talk about them and I want to bring them to other organizations, because the not every agency does what they're doing, but they can learn from them. And and then there's, I meet a lot, chiefs get a bad rap, especially from patrol.
Sure.
Because, the saying is, excuse my language, shit rolls downhill. We've all heard that. Anybody who's ever had a job has heard that. Well, that's not true. it rolls uphill.
Yeah.
It might roll downhill, but it rolls uphill too.
That's two-way street.
It is. And, you know, you got a chief who's got a boss. Everybody thinks the chief is the decision maker.
No, he's got...
He is.
Got he or she's got bosses too.
He might act like it, but he's got a boss and he gets told what to do. And he tells somebody and he tells somebody. And then you got sergeants in the middle who are babysitters. They're doing everything the lieutenants and captains don't want to do. They get dumbed on. And then on top of that, they got to babysit, especially the rookies on, you know, they got to babysit. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but
they no, watch a lot of hold handed.
Better terms. They got to babysit, make sure you're doing things right. You're not breaking the law. You're not stepping over the line and, you know, all that. So it does roll up and downhill. And there's a lot of guys out there that just haven't had the time or they want to, they're maybe a little overburdened and, or, but they all care. I have conversations and everybody cares.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of having the simplest thing that I do is have conversations.
Yeah.
Like you and I are doing.
Yep.
With guy, when I get up, I don't care how big the crowd is. Hey, I just want to have a conversation with you, man. I used to tell my story. I don't do that anymore. I might interject a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's going on and what can we do to fix it? Because if you ask the audience questions, they got great answers. They really do. And so to get back on the subject, there's a lot of agencies that don't. And then there's a lot of agencies that do.
Yeah.
And do I think it's getting better? Absolutely. If we stick to the plan and as first responders straight across the board, if we focus on being successful at what we're trying to do, the rest will come.
Yeah.
The rest will follow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said, brother. For those listeners out there who are listening to all this, Doug, you know, and they're struggling, they're suicidal, they're depressed. What advice before we wrap up? What advice, what words would you give them?
Listen, I live a nightmare every day. Mm-hmm. Every day. I lost my 3.5-year-old son over this.
Mm-hmm.
And I had adopted a little boy, had him 3.5 years from the day of birth, and they took him from me when I did this. And so every day I live with this nightmare. And so I tell everybody, man, make a phone call, reach out. Call a friend, call somebody. Don't think you can do it on your own. You're not a punk. And I challenge anybody to call me a punk.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're not a punk, and that's what we think, or a sissy, or whatever term you want to use. That's not in the equation. We train our entire lives, no matter what job we do. I don't care if you're a store clerk, or a librarian, or a cop, or a firefighter. We train our entire lives to do our jobs better. We train to shoot guns, do that, but we don't train enough to take care of ourselves. We spend so much time trying to fix other people, and we spend so much time doing our job that we don't go home and do our job at home, and we don't take care of ourselves enough. So my message is make a phone call. There's plenty of people out there from one corner of the U.S. to the other. I mean, it's actually too much. There's 800 organizations probably out there wanting to help somebody. And now, granted, there's some POSs out there that just want to make money. I know them myself. But there's good, wholesome people out there. And even if you're not comfortable with that, go to your church, call somebody.
Yeah.
Don't ever think that that's the answer. And the reason I was telling you about my son is if you think that it can't get worse, it can.
Yeah.
And also, man, life is good. It's hard. It's hard. But, man, there's a lot of good things. And people, we need each other, man. We don't need to. It's just not worth it. It's a hard thing to get across. But, man, listen, man, it's just not worth killing yourself over. Trust me, I learned it the hard way.
And the damage you leave in the wake. You know,
it's amazing.
Your problems are over when that happens, but it's just beginning for other people that love and care about you.
Yeah. And you can literally lose your mind and not be able to comprehend that. I've been there.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a job. It's a cool job. It sucks at times, you know, just like any job. There's fun days and there's bad days, but it's a job. And where are, you know, why do we get to a point where you're willing to take your life over that? There's people out there that can fix you.
Yep.
And it's inevitable. And I don't care who you are. I know the biggest and baddest dudes from one side of this world to the other. And every one of them will agree with me. From Delta boys to SEAL boys, you name them, the big tough boys. They'll tell you, man, that it's just not worth it. It's just a job.
And life's too fucking short, brother.
It's too short. And it's just a job. Yep. And you, and to do this job, you're going to acquire pain and misery and trauma. And there's people out there who can fix that trauma and make you smile. That's why on our logo, it says live happy.
Yep.
Because listen, man, that's what we do. We work to get a pension. We work to retire. We work to buy ourselves fancy cars and all the other bull crap. Live happy, man.
Yeah.
Take better care of yourself. Make yourself physically better, mentally better, the whole nine yards. And, you know, don't throw it away over a not a good reason.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I got that message across good. Please, you know, if anybody ever wanted to, you know, discuss it better, man, you know, call me. I'll have that conversation.
Well, Doug Monda, brother, it has truly been an honor talking to you. Thank you so much.
Same here.
For coming on the show. If people want to reach out to you, brother, how can they find you?
www. I don't know. You guys know it. The W's, man. You're talking to the wrong. Survivefirst.us. Yeah. We're a .us. My number's on there. That phone, there's a couple numbers, rings to my cell phone. I will pick it up. If I don't pick it up, I'm helping somebody else, but I'll call them back. My email's on there. My wife is the master and wonderful at helping spouses and family members. She's the meat and potatoes. Yeah. I'm just the guy who pulled it off and gets up and stand in front of people. But you can call me anytime. Yeah. I'm going to pick up the phone, man.
Yeah, Doug Monda. Brother, God bless you. God bless you and your wife and for doing what you're doing for our brothers and sisters. If there's anything I can ever do for you, please, brother, reach out to me. I know you're going to be out in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm coming
in August. And please, I'd love to hook up and walk with you. And yeah, brother, you take care of yourself. Thank you for coming on, my friend.
Thank you, man. And it was a true honor, man. And thank you for supporting everybody out there that needs help. And I truly appreciate it.
All right, brother, you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.